Good afternoon and welcome to Boston Symphony Hall, perhaps the greatest space for this music in the entire world. The Mahler Sixth is going to sound electrifying here. Alex Ross said, Mahler was a magician of orchestral spectacle and a master of the oh my God moment. That should be enough to keep your attention. But is it really enough for people who are hearing this music for the first time? What about that group of kids from Lexington High School who played in Carnegie Hall yesterday, and instead of going home to be with their families, they came directly from Carnegie Hall to Symphony Hall to hear this performance? And what about Min Soo Chai in the second violins, who brought 20 of his chums from school in Weston, persuaded them. None of them have ever heard Mahler's Sixth Symphony. Many of them have never heard a symphony orchestra. Most people have not yet heard this symphony. It's extraordinary that they're written in 1904. It wasn't played in New York until 1944. 40 years it sat quietly unattended. It is an overwhelming experience. It is overpowering. It is very long. It is close to 1.5 hours in length. It is very complex, and it's extremely emotional and profound. The BPYO players range in age from 13 to 21. For 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds to play this music is almost unthinkable. Mahler could not have imagined that that could happen. He was overwhelmed by it himself. His wife said he couldn't conduct it. He paced up and down in the artist room waiting to conduct in a state of almost apoplectic fear for the intensity of this music. It's the most anguished and tragic piece of music that he ever wrote. And she said, no piece moved him as much as this one. But it's also the most classical, because it's a normal symphony in the sense that it has four movements. First movement, scherzo, andante, and then the final movement. So in that sense, it's normal. The first movement is in sonata form. Exposition, development, recapitulation, and coda, just like the Eroica, no different. Well, the size of the orchestra is different, but essentially, that is the shape of it, and it's not that difficult to master. The beginning of the piece is absolutely memorable. Four notes, pum, 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 as if a hammer is being smashed down on an anvil, and a hammer is an important element in this piece. It is grim march music. Ferocious, and there are lots of different motives at the beginning. And then it arrives at an intense moment in which we hear two motives that become central to this piece. One is an A major chord in the trumpets, which falls to a minor from triumph to despair. And I want you to hear that moment. It comes many times, and each time it comes, you can feel that pull down to tragedy. The other one is a tattoo on two timpanis. And it comes many, many times. that represents fate. And fate in the sense of an unavoidable destiny, something we cannot either deal with or cope with. The exposition after this moment goes on with a small, beautiful, quiet moment in the winds, a little like Bruckner, and then comes an amazing moment, a moment in which all these 42 violins play a theme. Da 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 dee da da. It's a representation of his wife. He adored Alma, and this is Alma's theme. And they play it with full passion and glory, soaring, ecstatic, always with that da 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 da, which is so characteristic of Mahler. Gets to the end of the exposition and it makes a repeat. It's the only symphony of Mahler where he wrote a repeat. Why? Because he wanted you to hear all the motives even more clearly and take them into your mind. And so listen more carefully at the repeat than you do the first time through. And then comes the development, and the development has all the themes, and you'll hear amazing sounds in the percussion, particularly the first time ever a xylophone in the symphony, and the xylophone plays. I don't know what it represents, maybe skeletons, maybe desperation, but the percussion play, this is the first time that percussion became central in the life of the symphony. And you hear the fantastic virtuosity of Mahler's orchestration. And suddenly it breaks off, and an amazing thing happens. We go into a pastoral scene, and we hear the sound of nature echoing from a great distance. Cowbells up here in the mountains. Actual cowbells. Mahler composed this piece in a little hut in the Austrian Alps, and as you're listening, you might imagine, close your eyes, imagine you're in the Alps, and you'll hear Alma's theme slowly now, gorgeous, an unbelievable calm, and then back to the development as if nothing had happened. And when the recapitulation comes, it comes with a blast of glory, because instead of being in A minor, which is what the piece is, it's in A major, but only for four bars. And then it falls again to A minor, just like those trumpet chords. And when it finally gets to the coda of the movement, we hear Alma's theme dominating, the triumph of love over adversity, and it builds to an exuberant and joyful finale. And then comes the second movement. Your program will tell you that it's the Andante, but it isn't. It's the Scherzo. I'll explain that in a minute. The next movement is a shock because it seems to be the same. It seems to be another march, except it's in three instead of in four, but it's in the same key. And it starts out with the same pounding beats of the anvil, and you might say to yourself, oh my God, not again. It's truly bizarre. It's eccentric in its effect. It's fanatical in its feeling, relentless, devilish, stamping. And then there's a middle section described by Alma as a description of her two little toddlers, Mahler's two children, who at that point were four and two, apparently playing in the sand. The tempo changes, not the tempo so much as the time signatures, that hadn't happened before, and changing meter, and timid and fragile, and then back to the pounding, sarcastic, violent music, and the dynamics are everything. And there's a trio, another section, in which there's some erotic, weird, almost shocking sensitive elements. Some of the strangest music ever written. And the second Viennese composers, you know, Schoenberg and Webern and Berg, they said, this is the first modern symphony. This is the symphony they loved. And then in the coda, the children's voices die away, and we're left in shocked silence. This is a tremendous challenge for any orchestra. See what they do. Follow it every moment of the way. And then comes the third movement. The third movement is the Andante. After two movements of dark A minor with pounding rhythms, we suddenly arrive in E flat major. And of course, I'm always told, don't talk about keys, but when you get to that moment, you might say, oh, what a relief to be in the world of E flat. Another world, a glorious tune on the violins, and then throughout the orchestra, cowbells again, this time on the stage. I'm not quite sure why. And then near the end, one of the most beautiful and emotionally moving moments in all of Mahler. Love will pour off this stage into the audience. Grab it, take it in. We need that love. Now, when Mahler wrote this symphony originally, he wrote the scherzo first and then this andante. But then he panicked and changed his mind because he thought the audience would be irritated by hearing those two movements together. I think he was wrong, but that's what he felt. And I feel that the first movement is normal in the sense it's a normal sonata form movement with all the elements, and the second movement, the scherzo, is abnormal with all the strange, eccentric, crazy elements, and I believe they belong as one. Mahler, the conductor, lost his nerve and switched them. And so in all the performance he conducted, he did the andante first and then the scherzo. I ask you that when you get to the end of the andante, ask yourself the question, do I want to go back to the scherzo? And I think you won't. So from this distant place of E flat major, there is a magnificent passage of music to modulate back to A minor in the finale. And it is a glorious passage of music. In your program book, you have a note by Michael Steinberg, which is simply wonderful description of this piece. But I don't think in the concert hall you'll want to read it, maybe some other time. But he says that the opening of the last movement of the Sixth Symphony of Mahler, that first section, is the single most magnificent achievement of his entire output. An interesting thing to think. And now we come back to all the great elements in the last movement. When it begins, the movement proper, it's in sonata form, you have an allegro, marches, and then a second theme, which is a jaunty theme on the harp. But it's hard to find your way around the last movement. So I'll give you one piece of help. There are three hammer blows, famously, in the Sixth Symphony of Mahler. And you will see and hear the hammer at the corner of the stage. These three hammer blows represented for Mahler three extremely tragic events that hadn't actually happened, but they happened shortly after he wrote the symphony. He had a premonition of three terrible things that were going to happen. The first of which is he lost his job as head of the Viennese Opera for anti-Semitic reasons. The second was that his beloved four-year-old daughter Maria died of diphtheria, a blow that he never recovered from, although he himself had observed the death of seven siblings during his own youth. But the death of his daughter was simply devastating. And the final one was that he discovered that he had a heart condition that would mean that he would have a very short life. Those three blows were in the future, but he put them into this symphony. We don't know why a great artist might have such premonitions. Now, each hammer blow is preceded by a fierce march and then a passage of spiritual uplift and triumph. And then it is cut off by the colossal blow of the hammer blow, like a tree is felled. The final blow, his own death, was so painful for him to contemplate that when he performed the piece, he eliminated the third hammer blow because he was so superstitious. Since he's dead, I feel that we have the right to restore it. So you will hear it. And it represents, of course, implacable fate. And the two elements in this piece that are constantly at war is overwhelming jubilation and the implacable fate of certain death. Those two are constantly in conflict. At the end, after the final hammer blow, there is a threnody for brass, and fate at the end is triumphant. This is the only symphony that ends sadly in Mahler, and the last tattoo on the timpani is now combined with the brass, A major, A minor, except this time there's no A major, only A minor. And the final note is numbness represented in music. Now, every single one of the people on this stage adores this piece. We've worked on it for a very, very long time. And I want to tell you a little aside, when you read in the paper that the quarterback has been replaced at the last moment for some injury or other, we've had three rather remarkable late additions to our orchestra. Our second flute had tendonitis and couldn't play, and Mara has stepped in as second flute at 2 days' notice. Yesterday, our first oboe, who plays a very important role in an orchestra like this, had an injury where she cut her finger and can't play. And so we are very, very lucky that Abby stepped in literally without any preparation or ever having played the piece, and as you will hear, plays exquisitely, and we're very grateful. And then an hour before the rehearsal just now, we heard our first cellist was ill, and we have Andres who stepped into the role. And so this is one of the exciting things about being in Boston and being with this orchestra. The talent pool is endless, and we are very, very happy to be presenting to you this great, difficult, magnificent, and overwhelming work with deep love, and we are deeply affected by it, and we hope you will be affected too. Thank you.